It's not even working. Yeah, it's working.
This is the Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History Report Number 2. Ann Fagan and Harold Kimball interviewing Dr. Reuben Schlesinger on Monday, July 28, 1986. Dr. Schlesinger, will you give us your name, address, and date of birth, please?
Reuben E. Schlesinger, 4625 Fifth Avenue, Pittsburgh. 12 February 1916.
Okay, what we would like to begin with, Dr. Schlesinger, is your childhood. Tell us where you were born and memories of those early days with parents, family.
I was born in Wimber, Pennsylvania, which is in Somerset County. I went to grade school there, but we moved to Pittsburgh in 1929. So I had just finished the first year of high school and skipped 2 years of grade school. It was a relatively rural coal mining community, probably had 20 Jewish families. My father was a combination of Rabbi Schoichet, Paul Krayer, Paul Philip, and also he had a meatpacking plant from which he made his living. So that I was steeped in the Jewish tradition at that time, and I remember during the holidays, I was permitted to sit up front with the elder people instead of with the other children because of the family connection. I had two sisters and two brothers, both of whom, or all four of whom, were older.
Was there a synagogue in this community of Wimber?
There wasn't a synagogue, but we had a hall, which was used as a synagogue. In other words, it had a section where they had an ark, a Torah, although we had a Torah in our house also. They would hold services there normally on Saturday morning, Friday evening, but it's a traditional Friday evening service, which is the service prior to dinner, not the service after dinner. And on holidays, and then if anybody needed a minion for Yortzeit or Yisker, they'd go around to the stores and maintain, get people. In addition to that, quite often, there were several of the Jewish people in town were merchants. A couple had clothing stores, jewelry store, furniture store, and they'd find it convenient to hold the minion right in that establishment because it was easier for the people to get there.
You must have some interesting memories of being a little boy in that kind of rather unusual community. Can you think about some of the things that stand out in your mind?
Yeah, I got into a couple fights with people who would use derogatory remarks. I remember one time the high school, junior high school, was about a mile from our home. We walked home for lunch. And before I got home, my mother got a telephone call from the mother of another youngster because I hit him in the eye with a snowball. It was just not an ordinary snowball. I put some water in it to make it hard because he called me a derogatory remark. And then I also beat up on a couple of other kids for the same reason. So after a while, people no longer picked on me because I was a little bit larger than average for the classes.
Did you find the life of the community revolving mostly around coal mining? What are your memories of the town?
Well, the town was basically a very friendly operation because it had a company store and then a lot of merchants. For example, it was traditional. On Saturday evening, the store stayed open. After it got dark, my mother and father, and I'd go along because I was only about 6 years old, and 6, 7 years old, would go to these stores and they'd sit in kibbutz for half an hour here, half an hour there, half an hour here. And also, that was the night that my father collected from these merchants for killing chickens or other fowls and for any meat they bought, because though he had a packing plant which killed non-kosher beef, he also had a section which was kosher. So any place you could get kosher meat there, unless you wanted to go to Johnstown, is from him. And so he packed the stuff in, and he got Saturday night pay. And I got the revenue from the fees for the chickens. I remember it was 10 cents for a chicken, 25 cents for a turkey, 20 cents for a duck or a goose, and a quarter for a pigeon. That was very popular.
Pigeons?
Very, very popular.
Hmm.
Well, what was it that you did?
I didn't do anything. I just got the money that he got whenever he killed them.
Oh.
Because most of the families, I say there were about 20 families, they were practically all kept kosher homes.
Mm-hmm.
Which goes to prove you want to keep a kosher house in a small town, you can. It's not a question. Maybe it's a little more inconvenient, but it's possible.
Does the community still exist, and are there still Jewish families?
Yeah, there are a few there. It's no longer coal mining, as I recall. It's primarily textiles, manufacturing, some ladies' underwear, a few things like that. But the coal mines, not that there's no business in the coal mines, but they were deep mines. They didn't build the supports properly from wood. The wood is rotted, so they sunk. Started to use it now, you'd get a whole landslide, a whole area. So they just don't use the coal mines. But the people who owned the mines basically gave all the money to the Pitt Johnstown campus, which is in Geistown. And the Berwins and White gave them the money, which they made the coal mines. That's how Pitt Johnstown got started.
When you and your family wanted to go into the city, was Johnstown the...
Yeah, there was a streetcar that ran from Wimber to Johnstown, took probably about 45 minutes, it was 9 miles. Mm-hmm. Or occasionally somebody would drive.
What do you remember about schooling in this little town?
School was very good.
Quality.
School quality was very good, and when I came to Alderdice as a 10th grade student, I really could have gone into the junior class into 11th grade based upon what I had, but I had to go to 10th grade, so I had repeated Latin, I repeated algebra, I repeated chemistry, all these courses, and took them all over again.
Your siblings were still living within the family when you moved to Pittsburgh, were they?
When we moved to Pittsburgh, I had a brother who was a physician who has since died. He was practicing in Pittsburgh, so he lived in Pittsburgh and he lived at home, both of us. When we moved in, he moved home. Before we moved in, he had an apartment here. I have a brother's an attorney. He lived in Pittsburgh when he went to undergraduate law school, and we moved into Pittsburgh just the time he was admitted to the bar. So he lived at home. And my two sisters lived at home. All four of them were married within a short period of 2 years. Early 30s, so I was the only one who really lived in Pittsburgh for a long time.
At what point in your early education did you decide about economics, or was that a relatively late decision?
That was very late. I was going to law school. Matter of fact, I had registered to go to law school, but I had told the dean that I was interested in graduate school if a teaching fellowship ever came along, which would support it. So we don't have any money. That was 1936. So I registered for law school. And law school used to be in the Cathedral of Learning. It began a week ahead of the regular school. So I'm on my way to law school the first day, and he bumped into me in the hall, and he said, "You still want a fellowship?" I said, "Yes." Well, I've got one. Because one of our men teaching labor economics resigned over the weekend. Do you want to take his courses next week? So I said, "All right." He said, "How about the money I paid in law school for tuition?" He said, "Well, I'll get that back for you." It wasn't very much. I think it was $300 for a year.
Oh, my.
That was in 1936.
36. So I started teaching.
Let's back up a bit. You were a boy in Pittsburgh during much of the Depression.
Yes.
Do you have some strong memories of that, the way it affected your family, the way it affected the community?
Well, I really didn't see the Depression too seriously as long as I went to high school. I graduated all of that in 1932, and really, the people going there didn't really see the Depression, per se. we had moved into a house on Northumberland Street. My father had decided to retire when he moved in. He was 50 years old then. We only last retired for about 6 months. He got bored. So we went back into business, got another packing plant. And at Alderdice, the group of people I went around with, their families were pretty well-to-do. So we didn't have any real problems. I could see other people who were suffering some, because in those days there was a tremendous battle going on constantly between the Squirrel Hill youngsters and the Greenfield ones. Greenfield days was a fight constantly. And the administration of the school kind of winked at the fight. We figured if they're going to stop, it's not going to stop. So just let them fight it out. Until one day we arranged something and the bunch of them were beat up pretty badly. No more fights. But then when I went to Pitt in 1932-33, starting, then you begin to see the effects of the Depression. Because I saw students who come to class and fall asleep because they worked 40 hours in the mill or someplace before coming to class. A lot of people in my class dropped out because they couldn't afford to pay. They'd buy the books, get the tuition. And then a little later on, I became a teaching assistant. I was given the opportunity to hire somebody to do some assistant work for me. If I ask you, what do you think the first minimum wage was that they were paid? This is already 1938. What do you think it was per hour?
Can't even
take a guess.
Harold?
Dollar.
25 cents.
Oh. This was in 1938.
And then shortly afterwards, it went to 40 cents. Well, I was given, this a little later on, I had got one of the top fellowships to Harvard Graduate School. It's considered the cream. High pay, everything else. And it paid $600 plus tuition, plus a deduction in my room, not my board. And the room is cost $150 a semester, so $150 a semester, that's $300. I got the $300 room for $150. So it gave $600, tuition, $150. Today, here, a beginning graduate assistant gets about $5,000 a year in tuition. So then you see low prices. Also, in the courses I took, they began to talk about Roosevelt, the Depression, unemployment. I didn't experience it too much myself because of the Alderdice background, where you had a different kind of group of people. But that also caused part of the animosity between Alderdice and the Greenfield-Hazelwood people.
Yes. Would the Greenfield-Hazelwood people be steel families primarily?
Unemployed steel, unemployed tradesmen, unemployed craft workers.
One other point I'd like to pick up on. You had experienced some anti-Semitism in Winburg.
Just from youngsters.
Yeah. What happened when you came to Pittsburgh and you lived in Squirrel Hill?
Well, I haven't talked about this with my wife. She claims she's experienced a lot of anti-Semitism. I personally did not. Because I work for the top companies in Pittsburgh. I do economic consulting. And I work for Gulf, Mellon, U.S. Steel, Alcoa, Duquesne Light, the other companies that are in, quote, this group of people, they're supposed to, for AT&T, Bell Telephone, they're supposed to be discriminatory. And I never ran into it. I would meet periodically with businessmen downtown to Duquesne Club. I knew I couldn't join it, but I didn't really want to join it.
Yes.
But I would meet with them there, give speeches, run seminars, conduct lectures there. I wasn't particularly fond of the university club, but they never met there because they're not downtown. And I found as much discrimination at Westmoreland.
Oh.
Not Westmoreland, but the club over here. Concordia.
The Concordia Club.
Concordia. Because I couldn't join the Concordia Club if I wanted to.
Yes.
You couldn't?
I could not know. Yes. Not in the 1930s or 40s.
I never knew that. I thought it was a Jewish organization.
German Jews.
Let's back up a bit.
That's interesting.
You talked about not encountering discrimination with corporations. Of course, by then you were a well-established expert in your field. What about as a young man at the university?
No. I stayed out of school on all holidays, not only the major holidays, the minor holidays, but I never have them. You find this among people. I belong to a fraternity. Our fraternity participated in all kinds of activities, and there wasn't, we had officers in different groups. It wasn't because you were Jewish or non-Jewish, it was how powerful you were on campus. And I think that during that time period, a lot of the people who were crying discrimination were not adequately trained to do the jobs. For example, there were very, very few people in, Jewish people in management. But if you went to a school, like I taught in management schools, who do you find in a class? You don't find many Jewish people in the class. So you get a circular argument. They say, look, I'm not going to go to management school because I can't get a job. Well, then you can't get a job because there aren't any people there. So they all went to law school, medical school, pharmacy school, dental school. I didn't run into this kind of a problem more seriously until later you get to the beginning of World War II during Proposition.
We'll pick up on that. That's an important point.
That's why I wrote this master's thesis in which I investigated policy. Sure, if you get down to employment office of some of these companies, personnel directors were discriminatory, not the company. There's a big difference. If you went to get a job, a certain way of coding your papers, they put an X on it or something like that. It meant that this was a Jewish person, this was a black, this was a Catholic. Or they would ask you what organizations you belong to. You put down B'nai B'rith. They didn't have to ask you if you're Jewish or not. The chances where you were.
Did they ask that? Was that part of the interview?
Oh,
did they
ask you religious affiliation? You could ask your religious affiliation, clubs. You could ask anything you want to. Mm-hmm. Married, divorced, children, unchildren, what religious organization you belong to. A whole long list of things.
What years are we talking about that this master's thesis covered?
Master's thesis was 1938.
38.
It covered a period of the 20s and early 30s.
I see.
What years, if I may ask, was this Concordia incident that you felt?
It was true up until World War II.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that a little bit, because it suggests the schisms between the various Jewish groups in the community.
Very, very strong.
Tell us about that, if you will. We're talking about the years between...
Up until World War II.
Okay.
1940.
So it would be the 30s when you became to Pittsburgh and became aware of it.
As a matter of fact, many of those people were assimilationists, who he talked about Israel, Zionism, had no interest whatsoever. Hmm. And then whenever Hitler came along, it changed some attitudes. And many of them became the great supporters of Zionism because it was a popular thing to do.
Hmm.
So it was known as a Deutsches Club.
And these were, of course, the Western European Jews, the Germans and Austrians primarily?
Primarily German. I don't know how many Austrians, but primarily German.
Yeah.
But that also caused the split in synagogues, for example. The Tree of Life developed through a split.
Why don't you tell us about that a bit, too, because that's
I'm not too familiar with that
story.
With that split, because I never studied the history of it. But basically, there was one synagogue, and they had an argument over introduction of religious rituals and traditions. And one group wanted more, one group wanted less. So the group that wanted less ritual and tradition formed Rosh Hashanah, and the other group formed Tree of Life.
This would have been when?
120 years ago, something like that.
Okay.
Because that's more than that, because I think we had our 120th celebration about 10 years
ago.
So it's probably 125, 130 years ago.
Okay.
No, it's only recently that Rosh Hashanah has picked up a number of traditional rituals. You never had a bar mitzvah Rosh Hashanah until just in the last 10 years, because Tree of Life used to have what were called bar mitzvah members. Join so their children can become bar mitzvah, and then Sunday morning, just like that, they quit because the children decided it's no longer of an interest.
You're talking about your current affiliation and families and so on. Reminds me of another element that we ought to talk about, and that is your meeting with your wife, your courtship, family background. Let's talk about that. When did you meet with her?
I could have met her a long time before through very coincidental thing, but I didn't. I often give informal lecture series.
Here at the university?
All over the place. You know, this time, there used to be a gentleman, he's since deceased, Morty Rosenbaum, who ran a fantastic informal series at the Y. And Morty had been giving a series on some economic issues. And my brother, who was the physician who subsequently died, was practicing between Wimber and Johnstown. He had hospital at both places. There was a young doctor in Wimber who was looking for a date. He couldn't find any around. There were very few girls, so he came into Pittsburgh one night to combine going to some kind of professional meeting and going out. He was a very good friend of ours, so he stayed at our house. And he said, I've got a date this evening. I said, I can't go with you because I've got to give this lecture. He said, well, I'll take my date over to the lecture.
This was in what year?
Probably about 49, somewhere around up there. I gave the lecture, and it was tradition after the lecture, a bunch of us would go to Webster Hall Coffee Shop after the lecture. So probably about 6 or 8 of us went over there, and Morty had a table, and he was a very fascinating individual. And I didn't see this doctor, so he didn't come. I talked to him later on. He said, well, my date didn't want to go there. That date was, that one turned out to be the girl I married. And I always kid her, she wouldn't come to hear a lecture. And after I started as a gayster, she used to come downtown to listen to her.
Natalie's maiden name was?
Friedman.
Natalie
Friedman. So then I met her through a close friend of ours.
This was several years later, was it? Or?
Maybe a year, year and a half later.
So we're talking about 1949, 50, perhaps?
It was the early part of 50, because we got married in the end of 50.
Right.
And her family in Keysport, and she lived in Keysport, but occasionally would stay with an aunt of hers, two aunts. She had two aunts living in Squirrel Hill, and sometimes she stayed with one, sometimes with another. And someone else also mentioned that I ought to call her. I said, I'm going to drive back and forth to Keysport for 20 miles a night each way. And then they said, well, she's staying with an aunt in Pittsburgh. I said, oh, she's staying with an aunt in Pittsburgh. That's perfect.
Now, you were, at this time, teaching at the university?
Yep.
When you and Natalie met?
Yeah, I had about 5 years in the Army. Came back in 1946.
The Army time, where was it spent?
All over the United States. I was an aide to a general. It's called administrative aide. I was involved with reports of embarkation, overseas supply division, and I want to stay in the Army.
Were you using your academic background in these jobs? Or?
I got one of the first assignments because of it. I had been doing a number of different assignments. I had rifle platoons and other things. And then I was being shipped to New York for some kind of assignment.
Can you pin down that date for us, approximately?
Probably about 1944.
Right. Had you been drafted into the Army?
I tried to get a commission in the Army, tried to get one in the Navy, and they both said, well, if you want a commission, join up and go to OCS, Officer Canada School. So I was finally drafted into the Army, and I went in. Went to Officer Canvas School. But before I went to Officer Canvas School, I was out in maneuvers one time, and a couple of Navy officers came along and pulled me out of ranks. Nobody knew what was going on. And they said, well, you've got a commission offered to you. You go up to Great Lakes Naval Station. I said, what am I going to do there? And they said, well, for 6 months you'll teach math, and then you'll get a ship. I said, I don't know what a ship's all about. And they said, well, you'll get a first mate that does, and then you'll learn. Well, it didn't sound like something I could do, so I said, I then forget I went on to this, yes. But then later on, I was being shipped to New York to go overseas, but the general, who was the second highest ranking Jewish general in the army, his name was Goodman. The first one was a man by the name of Rose, was killed. So Goodman became the first highest ranking. He had an order that anybody with 3 degrees or 2 professional degrees, he went to sea. I didn't know that. So I get pulled off Monday morning and I'm interviewed by the general. And he says, what are you doing tonight? I said, nothing, because I'm supposed to ship out tomorrow. He said, no, you're not shipping out tomorrow. He said, I want to see you tonight for dinner. So I had dinner with the officers club and stayed with them. And did some intelligence work. So the degrees responsible for getting the assignment, but a lot of the work I did was not related to economics. Mm-hmm. Some of the statistical work. Now, then when I wanted to stay in the army, that would have been economic intelligence.
You wanted to stay in, so obviously it was a positive experience for you.
Yeah.
What were some of the good things you remember about it?
So first of all, I was in all the planning of all the invasions. So I knew exactly where the troops were all the time. I knew what supplies they needed. I knew where they were, who they were doing. I knew about the Japanese invasion long before it took place. I was supposed to go to Japan. I didn't know about the atomic bomb, but I knew all of a sudden that all the preparations to go to Japan were canceled just automatically. So I knew something happened.
Did you have to be cleared through security?
I had top clearance security. As a matter of fact, they went to Winburg and investigated people, asked them questions about where I was born, where my parents were. And I had a lot of trouble because both of my parents were born in Europe. They wanted to know where, when, how they get to the United States, when they were naturalized, and on what ship they came over. Well, I didn't know what year or what ship, but I used to remember vaguely my father saying something about coming into Baltimore and my mother something about going into Philadelphia.
Your parents were no longer alive by this time.
Oh, yeah.
Question. But did they have any, they had no memories of this?
They know the name of the ship.
Yeah.
And my father died in 48, my mother in 1951. They found it clear. I was clear for top secret about once every 3 months. I carried a top secret clearance until just a few years ago, because I was active in the Army. I retired after 31 years.
Were you a reserve Army?
Yeah, I used to go to reserve camp every summer, one night a week. Then I retired with the Legion of Merit.
What are some of your outstanding memories about people you encountered in the Army or events? Are there some specifics?
Well, I checked with General Marshall.
What was your impression of him, Dr. Schlesinger?
A very, very capable individual, but an individual who you couldn't really insult, not a good word, contradict him like that. Very straightforward and a little hot-tempered. I was supposed to be on General Eisenhower's staff, but my general wouldn't let me go. I had a sergeant major who had been sergeant major for Eisenhower and also for McCarthy.
He must have told you some good stories.
So I had good assignments. I, just to get a diversion, I would take troops across the country. That was not part of my job, but every once in a while, because all the work we did was under pressure. To ease the pressure, I'd take a train load, say, from New York to California, which would normally take about 6-7 days, and I'd take 2.5 weeks, because there's no hurry. And every time they needed the railroad tracks for freight, they let that go, and we sit with the freight cars.
What did you do? How did you keep them involved in what?
Well, if, let's say we had a stopover for argument's sake, we try to avoid the big cities, but you get outside of Chicago, and we get in touch with one of the army camps there, and they'd come over and take the people there. They might get a shower, might get dressed, have some entertainment.
No teaching or anything?
No. Matter of fact, some of these were pretty of trips, because I had one group that came over, they'd been in Europe, they were being transferred to the Pacific, they didn't want to fight anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it would take, you had breakfast, say, at 8 o'clock in the morning. So by the time you go through the line, think back out again, you're ready for supper. And lines and lines and lines. And a lot of times people didn't want to stand in lines. I get this one fellow says, he started breaking through the line going to the front. I said, you have to wait your turn in line. He said, I'm going to wait my turn in line. Wait your turn in line. He said, I got something with me, so I'm going to wait my turn in line. He pulls out a Luger. He says, I killed some people in Europe. He says, I'll kill you too.
What was your rank then?
My what?
Your rank.
I was a lieutenant.
Mm. He didn't respect that.
No. So I says, okay, you can break the line.
And
yeah, we'd have problems halfway down around Virginia, another group around Petersburg. A prostitute gets into the train. They couldn't figure out how she got there. Well, she broke the window in the restroom and they pulled her in. We were sitting at Petersburg for about 4 or 5 hours.
Mm.
So you get a lot of incidents on those trains, which are different than the normal daily ones that you have. But they got there.
You had how many years total in the active army before you
Active army, about five.
I see. And were you on leave from the university at the time?
Yeah, they had me, yeah.
What sort of arrangements? Did they have to guarantee that your job was waiting for you?
Yeah.
Or? I see. You were not...
No, if I decided to stay in the army, like the assignment that I was going to get was going to be a teacher at West Point.
Mm-hmm.